Hello, this is Robert Kiyosaki. I am one of the authors of the book Rich Dad, Poor Dad, a true story about the two fathers I had. Obviously, one was my real father, my biological father, and the other one was my best friend's father. One was a PhD in education, a brilliant man. He graduated from college in less than 2 years. He went on to Stanford, University of Chicago, and Northwestern, and he finally got his PhD. The other dad was a man who dropped out of high school because his father died and he had to take over the family business. So one dad was educated and one dad was uneducated. One dad was rich and one dad was poor. The irony of the whole thing, it was my uneducated dad who became one of the wealthiest men in Hawaii where I grew up. It was my poor dad who was the educated one. He was a government employee. He made a substantial salary, but the problem was, no matter how much money he made, he was always short of money at the end of the month. And so Rich Dad, Poor Dad is really a story about what these two very strong, honest, hardworking men taught their sons, my best friend and I, about the subject of money. In Rich Dad, Poor Dad, I talk about the six basic lessons that my rich dad taught me relative to the subject of money. The first one was the rich don't work for money, which is quite contrarian to what my poor dad, my educated dad, said. He always said to go to school, get good grades, and find a nice, safe, secure job, and work hard. In other words, work hard for money. And what my rich dad said, never do that. Always learn how to have money work hard for you. And so one of the big differences I'm going to get at on this tape is that it's often the very simple beliefs we learned as kids or young people, either handed down from our parents, our friends, or from the school system, that determine the outcomes in our life or the life's path we take on. You see, if you say to somebody, go to school and get a nice, safe, secure job, become an internal navigation system which causes you to go out and look for certain things. So it was my poor but highly educated dad that said, go out and look for a safe, secure job or a good company to work for. And what my rich dad said, I don't do that, he says, go to school, both recommended getting my college degrees, yet he said, after college, go out and look for a good company to buy. And in that slight difference determined the internal navigational system of the brain, and that's what caused me to go out and look for different things and to gain different skills along the way. Instead of looking for a job, I started to look for how does a person go out and buy. So from the age of 9, my rich dad was guiding me to become a person who acquired companies rather than a person who worked for one. And in that slight difference at a very young age, like the age of 9, that made all the difference in the world way down the road. We all have had incidents in our lives where something's changed. You know, we had some incident that shocked us or woke us up. And for me, the wake-up call was when my highly educated but poor dad was downsized at the age of 50. And here he was, a PhD, who all he ever knew was to work for the government. Suddenly at age 50, being told that he can't ever work again. And that was the end of my dad's. And I started to realize it, you know, when he was 50 and I was about 20 at the time, I realized that I wouldn't follow his life path. I would not do as he told me or advised me, which was to get a nice, safe, secure job, because I didn't like what I saw happen to my dad. And I decided that time, just as I was getting out of the military, that I would follow my rich dad's advice, which was not to get a safe, secure job for a good company, but learn how to buy good companies. And those are the things that change. Yet, I still would not have said anything if I had not seen what I consider some of the greatest changes of all happening right now as we approach the year 2000 and beyond, is that what concerns me is the idea of a nice, safe, secure job is an idea of the industrial age. And in 1989, when the Berlin Wall came down, I really suspect that we ended the industrial age and went into the information age, and as they say, the rules have changed. And the problem is the rules have changed, but people's ideas have not changed, and I still hear parents advising their kids go out and get a nice, safe, secure job when businesses have changed. See, in the industrial age, the rule was that if you worked for a company all your life, then if you retired at age 65, the company would take care of you for the rest of your life. And if a business didn't do such a good job, then the government, like in America, it's Social Security or the pension plans in other countries, they would take care of you and supplement your income. So the message was to the people that you never had to worry about finances, investments, or being a good money manager, because when your working days were through, somebody would take care of you. In my opinion, what that bred was the entitlement mentality, or what I call the welfare state mentality. And in the information age, Russia went broke. And my concern is, for the very first time, America's debt load and also the entitlement load, which is really the biggest load of all, may bankrupt the United States around the year 2010 to 2030 in there, just at about the time my generation, the baby boom generation, begins to retire. So that's why I really came out and decided to write a book about what my rich dad taught me versus my poor dad taught me, because it is time that we all, as Bob Dylan says, you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone. And we do need to learn about money, since our school system does not teach anything about money. So that's why I wrote Rich Dad, Poor Dad. That's why I have the game Cash Flow, which teaches finance, investing, and accounting simultaneously, as well as our other educational products that assist people in, you know, taking control of their financial future. And those are the two main reasons why I'm actually doing this. I don't need the money, but I do it because I think there's a need for it, there's an urgency for it. And I want to say, some of the things I'm going to be saying today may rattle some or disturb some of your belief systems. My intention is not to upset or disturb anybody or invalidate, but more point different points of view. And if you'll just listen to the different points of view, maybe you can make your own decisions for your own life here. Today I'm very excited because I have two people I love and trust very much in my life. And one is my CPA, who guides me through my trials and tribulations, and the other person is a fellow teacher, Dr. Ann Nevins. So, Ann, would you introduce yourself first?
Thank you. My name is Ann Nevin, and I have a doctorate in educational psychology from the University of Minnesota, and I've been a teacher educator for the past 30 years. Currently, I'm a professor of teacher education at Arizona State University West.
My name is Diane Kennedy. I'm a CPA in Reno, Nevada. My specialty is tax strategies and tax planning for high-income individuals. All of my clients own their own businesses, do their own investing. Average income is between $500,000 and $1 million a year.
Thank you very much. So what we have in the room is we have Ann Nevins, who is a leading predominant educational psychologist, and we have Diane Kennedy, who, like she says, she only works with high-end business people and investors, which is also a member of Mensa. She's a very brilliant individual, so I'm very honored to be around them. And what we'll be covering, we're going into greater depth about the six lessons my rich dad taught me. I'm going to go into how we learn to be rich and how we learn to be poor. From the early stages of life, we are programmed. What my rich dad taught me was this, is very simply, you never work for money. So what my rich dad said was never get used to the idea of a paycheck. That the moment you got used to the idea of a paycheck, at that moment, you actually shut down your brain. Another thing he said was never say, I can't afford something. Always say how you could afford something. So what I'm getting at here is a lot of people think that money will solve problems. It's not money. It's really the thought pattern. And that's why I invited Ann Nevins here, an educator, to talk about how we learn. For instance, we're programmed to say, go out and look for a nice, safe, secure job. And at that moment inside the brain, I want to talk about this, is that we have eyes for sight and we have the brain for vision. So the moment the brain starts hearing, go out and look for a safe, secure job, it's called the reticular activated system. It's the internal guidance system for our eyes, what we look for. So when you say to somebody, go out and look for a nice, safe, secure job, that's what they go out and look for. In other words, if somebody says, look for Porsches, all of a sudden all you see is Porsches. You say, look for BMWs, and all you see is BMWs. And that's how the brain works. The difference was my rich dad programmed me to never look for a safe, secure job, is to look to how to invest. And so in that guidance system of the brain, it changed the life path of my life. The second part is this, and they say, very common, they say, look for a nice, safe, secure job so you can buy the house of your dreams. Now, for those of you who have received my brochure on my game Cash Flow, who have read my book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, you may recall the income statement and then the balance sheet, which is the foundation of financial literacy. If you're looking for a safe, secure job, your focus for that income statement and balance sheet is for the income side. And when somebody says buy the house of your dreams, you're now focusing on the liability side. So what a child from a very early age is programmed to look for a job, in other words, become an employee, and then become a consumer. Nobody ever says look for assets. Man, how are we programmed? How does the mind work? Being an educational psychologist, how does it work?
I am sad to say that most teacher educators don't teach in the colleges of teacher education. And most teachers, therefore, don't understand how the brain works in creating the lessons that children have to learn. So the best thing you have to do once you've gotten out of school is you may have to practice unlearning the things that your teachers have taught you about yourself.
As well as your parents, too.
As well as your parents. But one of the most important things that current educational psychology and some teachers are doing in school is understanding and teaching in such a way that more than just one of your intelligences is developed. And when I say that, I'm going against what most of us have learned, and that is that I have one intelligence, I have one IQ score, and it's fixed, it doesn't change. And yet, in the last 20 years, there have been hundreds of research studies showing that, yes, you have more than one intelligence. You have the ability to change that intelligence. And much of it is what you say to yourself, and that's what Robert is talking about in terms of retraining your brain. Now, some of the intelligences you may already know that you have. For example, you can read, you can write. Some of them are a little bit more mysterious, like the idea that you have a natural intelligence. And Howard Gardner at Harvard School of Education has developed a book called Frames of Mind, which describes the multiple intelligences, one of them being an appreciation and understanding of how the nature works. And he calls that natural intelligence. Another intelligence, for example, is mathematical intelligence. And that's one of the intelligences that Robert has absolutely developed in himself and in Diane as well as a financial genius, which is something that I'm learning to do. And as a teacher educator, I have a safe, secure job. I am learning how to retrain my brain to see that I can have a business as well as be an employee of, as it happens, Arizona State. So understanding that you have a very flexible brain, as a matter of fact, you are a learning machine, and that you can, on your own, and perhaps even against the advice of people around you, retrain your brain.
The reason I had Ann come here is a lot of times I hear people say that I didn't do well in school, that's why I can't be successful. I think what Ann is saying, our school focuses on only one of the seven geniuses,
right,
and that we have six other geniuses that we really do need to develop. And in my next book coming out, The Cash Flow Quadrant, I go into that to become successful financially really requires five of the seven geniuses, which is the reason so many times people do well in school, but they don't do well in the real world. Or as my rich dad would always say, he says the A students work for C students and the B students work for the government. And it's oftentimes the C students, yeah, and it's the C students who have a broad or a general type of intelligence developed. And a lot of times the people who do very well in school are very focused on one, you know, academic intelligence or reading intelligence only. Would you agree with that?
I do agree with that. And the one of the intelligences that have just in the last 5 years been acknowledged is that of emotional intelligence. And a man named Daniel Goleman has written a book called Your Emotional IQ. I just read in Arizona Republic today that the U.S. Marine Corps is teaching their Marine recruits about emotional intelligence. Now, why would they do that? One of the things that we know that most children who come through the public school, they end up being afraid to try new ways of learning.
They're afraid of making mistakes.
They're afraid of making mistakes. And so they basically learn out of a fear or an avoidance of making mistakes. And one of the things that emotional intelligence teaches you is how to deal with your fear and get through that fear and do it anyway. So that one of the things that you can learn to do is change the way you learn by learning in different ways. And one of the ways you can change that is to change from a fear of learning, a fear of making mistakes, to a fun-filled way of celebrating, even celebrating your mistakes, because it is out of the mistake that you can be motivated to find out what went wrong and therefore make a correction.
And that's why, you know, you've played Cash Flow with me several times. And the reason I created Cash Flow as a board game is when it comes to money, the biggest fear people have is losing it. And so what they do is become bill payers or become savers. Their emotion of fear says play it safe. So it's that fear that generates the thought in the brain that says play it safe. And so then the eyes start looking for safe, secure investments. The problem with safe, secure investments, they don't exist. And, you know, I mean, mutual funds, everybody's in mutual funds. This is July 1998 as we talk today. The market keeps going up. And so everybody's riding the mutual fund craze, which are fundamentally amateur investors investing, hoping the fund manager knows more than they do. Which the problem with mutual funds, if the market goes up, they go up, and the market comes down, they come down also. And that's what the amateurs have not yet reconciled, is not the thought of it, but the horrible emotional fear and terror and anger and sadness. All those emotions happen to you when you lose big time. And I've lost so many times in my life, and that was one of the things my rich dad taught me. He said that losing was a part of winning. Anybody who tried only to win and never to lose could never, ever win. And in our school system, what we're taught is never to make mistakes. Now, that'd be like saying ride this bike but never fall off. And you can never, ever learn if you've been programmed or conditioned to never make a mistake. So the reason most people are not financially successful is emotionally and mentally they've been conditioned to not make mistakes with money. So that's why cash flow was created, so that you could play the game with play money in an environment and learn and risk only play money versus real money.
That's a really good point. And one of the advantages of learning through playing a game is that it is perceived as a game. And we know that when people participate in a game, that they are more likely to have fun. And in this game of cash flow, not only are you having fun or potentially having fun, but you're learning a new vocabulary. You're learning how the rich think about investments. You are learning how to keep a financial statement. You're learning the difference between an income statement and an asset and liability statement. You're learning the difference between what a return on investment will provide you. And you're doing it in a relatively risk-free environment. Who you play with can make a difference in how you play. So one of the things that I recommend is that you play with people who are very different than yourselves. Play with people who are successful in investing. Play with people who aren't. Watch their strategies. Because basically, what we do when we're learning in a role-playing situation is the way we would play in real life. But it feels so risk-free. And we can become aware of our core beliefs by the way we play a game.
And wouldn't you say, as a doctor of educational psychology, there's a difference between learning with fear, which a lot of people, versus learning with fun. What happens with, you know, the difference between fear and fun?
Oh, under a fear-based system, you take very limited risks. You wait until you know what you think you know the answer is. And then when you provide that answer, you look for someone else to tell you if it's right or not.
Because you don't have the security or the self-confidence.
You don't develop security or self-confidence. When you're operating out of a fun perspective, where even mistakes are perceived as an opportunity to have a different experience in a game, then you're much more likely to have an open mind about a different strategy. If you play within the framework of games, you automatically go into the experience knowing that you can have different strategies. Whereas in a fear-filled experience, you are very careful about the strategies you use. In a fun-filled experience, you might try a strategy that you would never try in a fear-filled experience.
And that's why Daniel Goleman wrote the book Emotional Intelligence. And people who are masters of their emotions oftentimes do better in the real world than people who have done well academically but have been conditioned to not make mistakes, to be afraid of it, to be fearful of making a mistake, you know, all those things. So that's why one of the best things my rich dad told me was, says that if you're going to become a business owner and develop businesses, the chances are I'd probably go bankrupt 2 or 3 times. And so what happened, knowing that, I said, well, I may as well get started. And it wasn't this attitude of fearing failing. I realized that failing was part of the process of success. I built a nylon wallet business, and we were extremely successful one day and then bankrupt the next. My rich dad sat down, talked to me. He says, what mistakes did you make? Correct, correct, correct. And we fired out. We went roaring back up again and crashed again. He says, that's number two. And I went, oh, my goodness. But it wasn't the stigma. It wasn't failure. It was part of the process. And by number three, I had made it.
Those are fine distinctions, Robert. And one of the things in my own history, I have a father who was in the small appliances business, and he tried his hand at going up against a big company. And he failed. In my own growing up years, I grew up knowing that my father went bankrupt, quote, went bankrupt. And in my mind, I developed an enormous myth about what that meant. First of all, it meant that our nice little suburban home was no longer our home. We had to go and live with our cousins. But when I became an adult and I looked at my father's resume, in those years where I had in my mind created a bankrupt father, he only called it a failed business venture. That was an enormous turning point for me to understand that the way that I think about and language, the way that I talk about
emotionally and mentally
would make a huge difference in the actions that I would take.
Thank you.
And that has created an enormous freedom for me in the last 5 years in order to even think about becoming an investor of my own.
Thank you. What cash flow is designed to do is train you to think about the asset column versus the income column and the liability column or the debt column where the mortgage is found and your bank notes are found. Most people are in debt up to their eyeballs, and they don't know the difference between an asset and a liability because their accountant or their banker will say your house is an asset. And if you understand cash flow analysis, your house is not an asset. It's actually a liability because it's costing you money. So people have this liability column so long and thick, and they wonder why they're hemorrhaging every month. It's because they're counting liabilities as assets and going out the back door. I have Diane Kennedy here as a CPA. What I want to talk about here is taxes, because one of the lessons in Rich Dad, Poor Dad was about how the rich pay less taxes than everybody else. And I think the reality, isn't it, Diane, that if you're an employee, you will pay more tax, you will pay more than your fair share of taxes as compared to the rich.
Absolutely, Robert. Basically, my clientele is all people who have their own business. Maybe they're an employee, but guess what? They're an employee of their own business. They're still controlling it. And the reason is as a CPA, there is nothing I can do to help someone who just has a job.
A W-2er.
Absolutely. We just call them W-2 people. They work real hard, and they try to save, and they buy a house because the banker told them they should buy a house. They invest in mutual funds because they really don't have the time to investigate anything else.
Because they're working so hard.
Right. And they are. They're working very hard building someone else's business. Now, I may decide I want to work real hard, but I'm going to build my own business doing that. That's a difference between the W-2 employee and the people that I see as clients.
Right. And so what Diane is, and what we talked about in Rich Dad, Poor Dad, one of the lessons was the idea of financial literacy. And if you look at most people leave school, they're word literate, which Ann talked about, the ability to read words and understand words, but not able to read numbers. And since they can't read numbers, they must take the so-called advice, I call it more an opinion, of an accountant or the banker or the real estate agent who says your house is an asset. And because they can't read, they really can't see who's taking the money from which pocket. And if you look at the expense column of most individuals, you have the income, expense, asset, and liability. The expense column, the number one expense is what, Diane?
Number one expense is going to be taxes for the average W-2 wage earner.
Right. And the poorer you are, the greater percent of your income is taken by the government. And that's why when you advise your child to get a nice, safe, secure job, if you're not financially literate, you do not understand where the money is going out of your pocket at a high rate of speed. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. I liken it to a wage earner is like on a treadmill, and they're carrying a pack on their back. And the more money they make, the more taxes they're paying, so the weight is heavier. And then they generally end up buying a bigger house, so they've got a bigger interest payment. So now they've got the banker riding on their back,
right,
too. The faster you'd run on the treadmill, just the more tired you're going to get. You're not going to get any further.
That's correct. So when you say to somebody, go get a safe, secure job, if you listen to the radio ad, go back to school, get your advanced degree so you can earn a higher wage. And this is what my rich dad said to me. He said that money does not solve your problems. In fact, if you have poor cash flow management, more money will get you further in debt. And that's what happened to my highly educated poor dad. He kept thinking that more money would solve his problems, and what he had was no financial literacy, which with cash flow, the board game teaches how to invest, how to do all this. And he couldn't tell who was stealing from him. And his number one expense, and he couldn't see this, was taxes. Now I want to say something about taxes. There's a lot of people say, well, it's the American way to pay taxes. I want to give you the history. My 2A subjects were history and economics. I understand those two subjects. America was formed on a tax revolution called the Boston Tea Party. And for 200 years, America boomed because we were a tax-free state. It was only until the 16th Amendment where some ideas came in from a guy named Carl that said we should take from the rich and give to the poor that justified government taking taxes. So I want to say this much. In 1940, do you know what percent of the U.S. population paid taxes? Most people don't know. Up until that point, Americans doggedly fought taxes. It was the American thing to do, starting from the Boston Tea Party. Then in 1940, the number of people paying taxes was less than 5% of the U.S. population, and there was only the rich. And suddenly the government found this source of income. They said, well, why don't we tax more people? And the excuse was World War II. So they started saying, that's the American thing, it's patriotic to pay your taxes, and they started taxing. And in 1943, they weren't collecting it fast enough, so what they instituted was a thing called the payroll deduction plan. At that point, they took it before you even saw the money. It came straight out of your payroll, and it kept going. And the problem is, not only was my dad, a government official, poor at managing money, so are most politicians poor at cash flow management. And so what has happened since 1963, 1964 with Lyndon Johnson, when he tried to fight the war on poverty and the war in Vietnam, both of which we lost, at that point the national debt, because of mismanagement, I'm not against paying taxes, I am against people stealing and mismanaging our government and the future of our country. We have mismanaged our government, so our debt is now so far out of sight, I would go get a safe, secure job and make sure the government gives you benefits and pensions. Entitlement mentality, not the Vietnamese, not the Chinese, not the Russians will actually sink this country, because we cannot pay for all the people with this entitlement mentality. And it came from this idea that we should tax the rich and give to the poor. The reality is the rich, as Diane knows, have ways of escaping paying taxes, but the poor and middle class do not. So the very people they wanted to tax escaped, and the people that should not be taxed are taxed. And I really do contend that taxes are unfair, because the people that are taxed the most are the poor. Would you agree with that?
Yes, I do. I want to clarify, too, that a Supreme Court Justice, Learned Hand, made the statement that we aren't required to pay any more tax than we have to. Now, that's an important thing. There's a difference between saying, I'm going to evade taxes, which we all know is illegal, and we're not advocating that.
No, definitely not.
But instead, we should set up ourselves so we don't have to pay a dime more than we have to. And that's what the Supreme Court Justice was saying. We don't have to pay more than we have to. However, if you have a job, you're a W-2 wage earner, you're stuck. There's nothing you can do.
Well, there's nothing a CPA can do for you.
Exactly, exactly. I don't have any clients that just do that, because there's no creativity. There's nothing you can do. There's no, fill in the form, send the check, that's it, you're done.
Right, you don't need a CPA.
So, exactly. The government is your CPA.
So the thing I'm talking about here is this. Since you're a little child, we're programmed, you know, to look for a job, da-da-da-da, and then buy the big house, buy the boat, buy and this. And so we're programmed to become employees. In other words, we make the rich man richer. We pay more in taxes, which makes the government rich. And then by them saying that your house is an asset, you now make the people who lend money, the bankers, rich. And that's where one of the lessons in Rich Dad, Poor Dad was mind your own business. And your business is the asset column. And the only people that Diane Kennedy can work with are people who actually have investments and have businesses in the asset column. Is that correct?
Yes. In fact, you just brought a great point up. The clients I work with have many advisors, but they're just that. They get advice from different sources, but they make their own decisions. And they take the responsibility for those decisions. As a CPA, I really can't know each individual circumstances. I can give you advice. I can give you options. That's how you learn.
Anna and I were talking about what cash flow is designed to teach. I say there's three kinds of people who invest or plan for their financial future. And Group C is the person who knows they need to invest, but they're going to do nothing. And I call them ostriches. And they just stick their head in the sand. And these people will either work hard until they die, or if you have this idea, I want to do nothing about investing or savings or finance, then what you should do is get a job with the federal government, but I don't know if that's going to be safe past the year 2010, because they might go broke. Or you can win the lottery, or maybe you can marry somebody who has a huge trust fund or something like that. So that's Group C. I don't want to do nothing. And I would say it's probably 60% of the population. They want to know nothing. Nothing, don't mean nothing. You know, I don't want to hear a thing. Mm-hmm. Let the government, let the business take care of my pension. Nothing. That's Group C. Then there's Group B, and these are the people who know they need to do something, but because they've been conditioned, you know, to look for the words are safe. In other words, what generates the word safe in the brain is the emotion fear. So they want a safe investment. And so these are the people who look for answers. So Group B looks for answers. And there's nothing wrong or right with that. If that's who you are, be true to that. And at that point, the most important person you can talk to is an accountant and a certified financial planner. But realize there's good ones and bad ones in, you know, both categories. And a certified financial planner is absolutely a must if you're going to be a person who just wants answers. Diane and I have the same problem. People come and tell me what to do, and I say, my goodness, I can't do that. And that's what, you know, the game Cash Flow shows, that you have a janitor playing against a doctor, against a nurse, a police officer, and all this. Everybody's financial situation is different. Do you have children? Not children. How old are you? How smart are you? How much experience do you have? So what you do is predicated not upon what my advice is, but what you know and what you have on your income statement and balance sheet. So people who want answers, you know, I can't help them. And then there's group A, and these are people not seeking answers. What they're doing is actually seeking problems. I would say 3% of the population is looking for something that's absolutely tragically trashed and bad, and I have the skills and abilities to have to take that tragedy, that train wreck, and make it better. It's no different than somebody finding an old wrecked Model T Ford and saying, I'm going to restore this thing and make it beautiful, a valuable piece of property. It's what we're trained to do. So class or group A are the people who seek out problems. I'm not looking for answers. I'm looking for problems. And the emotion for me is fun. I have the best time. The reason I don't want a job is because it would interfere with me going out looking for what I call train wrecks, either real estate or businesses and things like this to fix, because once I fix them up and I leave them there, I never have to touch them again. Once my apartment building is up and running, I can forget about it, go do something else. You know, I'm looking in China right now because few people realize that the biggest real estate boom in the history of planet Earth is underway right now in China. 1 billion people are now looking for a house to live in. And that's why I'm in a real estate company. They're developing houses in China. I mean, you go to where the boom is. Where most people, oh, China's too risky, it's dangerous, what about Tiananmen Square and all that? So it's fear that affects their thinking. And with me, it's the fun and the challenge. We've got problems out there. Let's go. Let's solve this. And I think that's what you see as difference, you know, the different types of people.
Well, absolutely. And we've got lots of other examples of that. Just when you were talking about successful people, I think of Lee Iacocca and I think of Bill Gates. There's two examples of people who found a problem, solved it, and became fabulously wealthy.
That's correct. And that's what I talked to Ann about, that is in school we're trained to look for answers.
Not only that, but wait till someone else tells us that we have the answer so that we develop almost a self-unconfidence in our ability
to tell me what to do, tell me what to do.
Yeah, tell me what to do, tell me what to do. So one of the things that I found personally very, very exciting is in the cash flow game, I have learned to play various roles. As I've been the janitor, I've been the professor, I've been the business manager, the police officer. And no matter what the role that I'm playing, I'm learning how to play the game of cash flow management. I'm still having to do my financial statement. I'm still having to figure out what those terms mean. And I am also doing that in a way that I'm changing the way that I think, changing what I'm looking for. Just as an example, in the first couple times that I played the game, and I didn't, I was cashed out
of
the game.
Yeah,
I had
hard
a hard time. I was first started to paying my bills, trying to get my mortgage paid, and instead of looking for investment deals.
And that's what happens is in the game, games reflect behavior.
So games reflect your real beliefs and your core actions.
Yeah,
so if you want to change your actions, if you want to change your behaviors, then you can do it the way Robert did it, which is in his real life from the age of 9 until his current age. He's had much practice in failing, practice in succeeding. And
but I've been only looking for one thing. I've been looking for things in the asset column. I've never looked for more money.
That's a good point.
And I've never looked for higher liabilities or, you know, a bigger house. I mean, not that I don't like a bigger house and, you know, my Porsches and my Mercedes and all this, but I don't work for them because my assets work for them. And this is the point I want to bring. If people want to make a change, the change starts in their head. And it's what they have to sometimes break up what they've been told to look for. If you're looking for a safe, secure job to make more money or go back to schools and get a higher paying job so you can buy the bigger house or the second house or take a bigger vacation, then you've trained to be a middle class, as Diane says, a slave with a backpack on. You're carrying the government, you're carrying the bank, and you're carrying your boss.
Well, changing the way you think is the first thing to do. Also deciding that you want to change. And that's one of the things that's absolutely in your hands, and in your mind, in your heart. So when you do that, you are going against all of your programming, all your prior experience, and perhaps everything that other people have been telling you to do.
If I could specifically say how that happens is most people have goals. And so if you have a goal, I'm going to find a safe, secure job, then that's a programming in your brain. If you have a goal, which makes you an employee, if you have a goal that says, I'm going to look for a nice big house or a second house or new curtains or a swimming pool or a car and all this, you're programming your brain to become a consumer.